This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Diddy sucks Prince Harry into his sex traffic cesspool. This as Justin Bieber makes a bombshell announcement amid claims he too was abused by Sean Combs. Diddy grilling Cassie on an NFL mystery lover as a Chris Brown romance revealed. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us. This as reports of Sean Combs' Tootsie Roll.
She is comparing Combs' penis to a Tootsie Roll.
Itty bitty ditty.
Hey, Diddy Michael Jackson.
Itty bitty ditty. Itty bitty ditty, the Tootsie Roll. Sean Combs' Tootsie Roll. Yeah, I said that, but I didn't say it first. An alleged rape victim said it first, but let's get to now. Joining us outside the courthouse, Lauren Conlon, investigative reporter and star of Pup Crime TV. Lauren, thank you for being with us. What is this I'm hearing about a mystery NFL lover? And what does that have to do with Sean Combs being charged with sex trafficking and RICO, criminal enterprise? They're just dragging Cassie through the mud for no reason.
I agree with you, Nancy. A lot of what we're hearing on the stand from Cassie, many of us are questioning what this has to do with anything besides laying a foundation. But the NFL player, we heard about this mysterious NFL player that really was trying to get us to see why Diddy was jealous. We also heard about a 2013 incident where Diddy was jealous of Cassie because she was allegedly dancing with Chris Brown and he stole her phone. Cassie actually denied on the stand that she was dancing with Chris Brown at all, but she does remember him stealing her phone. There was another incident we heard about that was pretty traumatizing for her, where she was driving with Diddy in the car to a doctor's appointment, and he told her, hey, text your mom, you're okay, and I'm paraphrasing. As soon as she unlocked her phone, she said that Diddy grabbed it, ran off with it, and she didn't get it back for a few hours, and her mom called the police.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to follow up with a shrink in just a few moments about the type of power and control. When I was working at the Battered Women's Center as a volunteer, Lauren, at that juncture, everybody was still tethered to the wall with a phone, right? And the perp would snatch the phone out of the wall. Here, same thing, different decade. So what else is happening in the courtroom beside the defense trying to drag Cassie Ventura through the mud, and after a particular moment of shredding her on cross-exam, Sean Combs had a hot mic incident where you could hear him say, I'm proud of you, to the lawyer that was attacking Cassie Ventura.
I thought that her approach was gentle. She wasn't badgering Cassie, and that was strategic. Well, we are not really seeing that on the remainder of the cross. We're seeing a lot of Cassie being called out for things. You know, she had alleged an incident where Diddy seemed to have this almost mafioso type dinner, and these are my words, after she heard about someone allegedly having an FO tape. Well, there was an explosive recording played where Cassie approached this person about the FO tape, and she said things like, I will kill you. I will bury you under the dirt. Again, I'm paraphrasing. And then she said, and it won't be me. I won't have blood on my hands. It'll be someone else. So, you know, that wasn't great. I did feel for Cassie on that. And oh, Nancy, we actually heard about Jonathan Odie. We actually heard from Cassie herself that she saw him hold up a phone during an FO, and she went to tell Sean Combs. And the prosecutor asked her, well, do you know what happened? Did he pay him off? Do you know about this? Cassie alleged she didn't know, but the rest of us know what happened.
So wait, you're telling me that it just came out on the stand that Jonathan Odie was brought up, and we've got him on tape saying in like 2018 that he was a sex slave to Sean Combs and that Combs would make him have sex with Cassie Ventura and sit back and masturbate and watch the whole time, and that Combs paid him off. He even mentioned Mark Garagos in that 2018 recording. That's not the best picture he ever took. But that said, now Odie has come out as part of the cross-examination, and Cassie Ventura describes an incident where Odie was videoing a freak-off, as you say, F.O.?
Mm-hmm. Yes, apparently he lifted his phone up and she freaked out and she told Sean Combs. And she alleged that she didn't know that he paid him off, but she knew that essentially he, quote, took care of it. Also, the company they were using, the escort company, it's called Cowboys and Angels. It was revealed that this escort service was part of a reality show called Gigolos.
Okay, you know, Lauren Collin, you're just full of probative information. You know, what they're doing right now is dragging Cassie Ventura through the mud in an attempt to make her look like the bad person. But I still say that that tape, that intercontinental tape, is going to carry the day. What else has happened on the stand today?
So speaking of trying to make Cassie look bad, they brought up a slew of text messages after that incident. And I know what they were going for. I mean, they were trying to say that they had a relationship after the incident. But in my opinion, as an observer, Cassie said something like, you know, I don't want Friday to happen again, you know, referencing the beatdown. And Diddy said something like, F Friday, LOL. And she kind of said LOL back. And I'm thinking, I mean, that's how you want to treat, you know, a beatdown like that? When you abuse the person you love, you say LOL, F Friday? I didn't think that made Diddy look good. And I know they were trying to make Cassie look bad for corresponding with him. Additionally, Cassie had alleged a rape that occurred in August of 2018, and the defense attorney found transcripts where she told the government that it happened in September of 2018, really trying to, again, poke holes in her story. And they also showed us text messages between Cassie and Diddy after the alleged rape, where he said, I know I didn't turn you on. I've fallen off. And she responds with a heart emoji. So there's a lot of that going on. And I have to say, Nancy, it's been so wild to hear the evidentiary stuff before the trial starts, because it's like we're sitting there and we're listening to a federal judge say the term freak off, which is just wild.
Guys, joining us at the courthouse, star of Pop Crime TV, co-host Lauren Conlon. Lauren, we've heard about Jonathan Odie. We've heard about a mystery NFL lover. What was that about? You told me about Chris Brown, but what about the NFL star?
Listen, I don't know much about sports, but I plan on looking this up after, because that was a moment that many of us were like, who did she date in the NFL? And I believe the year, don't quote me on this, but it was sometime between 2013 and 2015.
Lauren Conlon, tell me how Cassie is holding up on the stand. How does she look today?
She looks beautiful. Her hair is down. She has a white shirt and a black jacket. And again, she remains poised. She remains composed. She's answering the questions as best she can. And we're going through pages and pages of text messages from 10 years ago. So it's trying. And when I was leaving the courtroom for lunch, I saw her lawyers walk in, bringing her some Dunkin' Donuts for lunch.
And how is the jury responding? How did they, their demeanors throughout the day today?
Overall, this jury has been very stoic, very rarely showing emotion, as well as Combs' family. Everyone seems to be pretty composed.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Lauren Conlon joining us outside the courtroom. I'll talk to you in just a few moments, Lauren Conlon. Let's bring in the entire panel. Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we are learning right now. But first, I want to go straight out to Robert Crispin joining us, private investigator at Crispin Special Investigations, but for my purposes, former federal task force officer for the United States Department of Justice, DEA Miami Field Division, never lack of business, former homicide, and for today, former vice cop. Robert Crispin, I put a lot of female victims on the stand, okay? I've put a female preacher on the stand. I've taken a depo from a nun in a different case. I've put prostitutes on the stand. I've put dope addicts on the stand. It never fails, whether it's a female preacher or a prostitute. They get dragged through the mud.
everything they've ever said or done wrong, according to society in the past, is brought up. So they've got Cassie Ventura threatening somebody. And I'm going to go to Sydney Sumner to explain why she was threatening someone. And it's caught on video, and they play it. I mean, think about it, Robert. Not out loud, please. The worst thing you've ever done. The worst moment. Not just talking about it, but actually having it on video. The worst thing. The thing you don't want your children to know about. Okay? Everybody hold that thought just a moment. And then a video emerges and it's played in front of a jury. She is being attacked for having other lovers, for some claimed flirtation with Chris Brown. All right? Who would want him after the way he treated Rihanna? But that's a whole nother can of worms. Just see what I'm saying? They're talking about her drug use. They're talking about a violent episode, a violent threat she made, and it's caught on video. They're doing everything they can to demonize Cassie Ventura. And you and I have seen it a million times, Crispin.
Yeah, they're trying to make her look really bad in front of that jury. But sadly enough, all the drugs, all the stuff that she was doing was an escape. It was an escape from her mind to get away from Diddy into a different world in her mind. The drugs helped her with the pain. The drugs helped her forget things. She's on certain things. She talked about being on Suboxone, which is a drug to help you get off an opiate addiction. These are things that start, believe it or not, with the boyfriend giving the drugs to the girlfriend, and the next thing, she becomes addictive. I see that happening in this thing. Because these drugs took her to a whole different level that took her into a world where she was numb and didn't probably know what was going on to her or going on to her. And then the next day, coming to reality and starting to have these text messages and trying to keep light of it because she was afraid of him. Yes, it was a 10-year relationship. Of course it was. But there was a lot of times it was really bad and she was scared to death to get away from him. Because of his power, his money, and his connection in the music world.
You know, Crispin, it's hard to understand. It's hard for people that haven't lived through it to understand. And I was saying earlier today, I worked at the Battered Women's Center as a volunteer for 9 years at night and prosecuted during the day on the hotline, right? And there were many times I thought, why don't you just leave? I almost blurted that out, but they had trained me, don't do that. Don't do that. Because think about it, Crispin. Think. What would you do to hold on to your children, your home, your job? I mean, you've built up a reputation over all the years with the DEA, with the task force, with the Department of Justice. What if you were going to lose it all? What would you do? I mean, I would do just about anything to keep my twins, to hell with everything else. But I would do anything to keep custody of them. But when you're in the position of thinking you're going to lose everything, and remember, she started with him when she was 19-ish years old, and no drugs, no alcohol problem, nothing like that, so fresh-faced, right? And you can see over the years what happened. But that's the way these victims think, what they're going to lose if they don't go along with it.
That's exactly what I said. And that's probably why she started doing all the drugs. And that's why she got addicted. And let me tell you what's important about her testimony today about bringing up Jonathan Otis, because that was a statement from, I don't hold me this, what, 2018? This wasn't any part of Rule 35 or a 5K1 in the federal system, meaning I'm going to give a statement and tell you something so I can get credit. This was an off-the-cuff comment during a law enforcement interview where he brings up things he did with Casey and Diddy. That has a lot of credibility. And let me tell you something. People in our industry, some of my best witnesses were the worst defendants because they're out there, they're in the field, they're in the mix, they're at these parties, they're doing drugs, but they're a wealth of knowledge. This just came up in an interview. I find a lot of credibility. I like him as a witness, and I would put him on the stand.
Okay, hold that thought just a moment. Be careful what you ask, for you may surely get it on the stand. Let's take a look at what he's talking about. And all of you ladies out there, I want you to look at Jonathan Odie and think, would I willingly have sex with this guy? Think about it.
I had sex with Cassie and Sean. Basically, he would masturbate and tell me what to do with Cassie. I had like 15 encounters, and I heard lots of business. Because what they would do is Sean talks a lot on the phone and on the TV with speakers and stuff, and I was like a sex settlement with Sean, okay? And he belongs to that agenda. That's why he's so famous. They land all the contracts. It's his attorneys. My settlement put me in a box. Basically, I couldn't talk. Because I was gonna be sued. So I let it be, but they've been following me, and they've had, Mark Garrick has had the FBI on me, has had other agencies looking at me and spying on me, okay? Because they wanted to set me up as an extortionist. Like if I was extorting Sean for money.
Let me go out to a shrink. I need a shrink. Dr. Cheryl Errett. Joining us, a clinical forensic psychologist specializing in trauma recovery, PTSD, and more at AskDrCheryl.com. Dr. Cheryl, thank you for being with us. I wanted you to see the Jonathan Odie bite, okay? Because this is back in, I'm pretty sure, 2018. Sydney, jump in if I've got the wrong date. Look at this guy. So you think this 21-year-old girl willingly wants to have sex with this guy on video? Yeah, I don't think so. But I'd like you to respond. And everything he says, I'm going to circle back to all the guests on this. But I want to ask you, Dr. Cheryl, what this means. Because everything he was saying in 2018, nobody believed him. They thought he was a nut. Talking about how does Garagos get up in everything? That Garagos was after him, that he signed an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, that he couldn't talk about what had happened with Sean Combs. But he said then that Sean Combs would force him to have sex with Cassie Ventura while Combs sat back and masturbated and watched and talked on his phone. He was telling the truth, right, according to prosecutors.
Yes, and he does seem credible for all the reasons your previous guest said. We need to remember that consent is a free yes. And in order for something to be consent, you have to be also equally able to say no. And if you are not free to say no, it's not a free yes. When we're looking at the video that's being shown right after Cassie tried to leave, after the FO or the freak off, those beatings, the control with the phone, the control over her career, the control over who she could see, these power and control dynamics, these are what happened when she tried to leave. So this does not look anything like a free yes. And it's interesting that they're not disputing the domestic violence itself, but they're saying that's not what he's charged with. Well, that's because that would be a state charge, and these are federal charges. And the fact of the domestic violence and the video evidence of the domestic violence sure seems to indicate the way that these power and control tactics were enforced. So this was not a free yes. This was not somebody saying, yes, I want to do this. And statistically, as you know, from working in the battered women's shelters, the time that is most dangerous for a battered woman is when she tries to leave, because that's when things get most violent. So a person's life is in most danger when they do try to escape their abuser.
State versus Sean Combs in full swing today in the Monahan Federal Courthouse in Manhattan. Joining us outside the courthouse, Lauren Conlon. Lauren, first of all, tell me more about what happened in court today.
It was an intense day with Cassie finishing up her cross-examination on the stand. What the defense seemed to be doing was really poking holes in quite a few of her statements, really trying to discredit her.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Lauren, but when you say poking holes in her testimony, you and I may disagree on whether a hole has really been poked in her testimony. So what exactly are you talking about?
There was a few instances where we saw text messages between Diddy and Cassie, where during direct examination, Cassie said one thing. For example, she said that Diddy would force her to do freak-offs during her period. During the cross-examination, We saw actual multiple text messages with Diddy and Cassie, with him asking her when she was getting her period for planning purposes.
Straight out to Sydney Sumner joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. It was my understanding that the specific words were, Cassie in a text stated she was ovulating.
I believe that's correct, Nancy. Diddy asked Cassie permission to set up freaky fun, and her response was limited to one word, ovulation. That sounds like a no, because she was worried about possible pregnancy while not using condoms.
You know, another thing, Sydney Sumner, there's a big difference. And there's a big difference in saying, hey, let's get together and have a freak off if you're not on your period, as opposed to saying, I'm ovulating, and then he makes her do it anyway. That's not the same thing. Isn't it true that Cassie Ventura testified he would force her to do freak offs with other men, sex workers, transported in from other states when she was on her period?
That's what she testified to in her direct examination, Nancy.
Okay, you know, to Brett Brown joining me, executive director of Surviving Assault, Standing Strong. It's a nonprofit to eradicate trafficking and abuse on girls and women. It seems to me that every way he could embarrass her, every way he could humiliate her or debase her, that's what he did. And yes, I know that she texted back as a willing participant at the beginning of their relationship when she's a young girl and he's like almost 20 years older than her, orchestrating all this. But so often, Brett, we see the victim going along because they feel like they don't really have a choice.
Oh, yeah. She absolutely had to go along. It's ludicrous to me that the defense is even using these texts, because the reality is this is a man she could never be honest with. So she had to answer every time he texted, and she had to say whatever she could to keep him from beating her. And that's true in her text directly to him and to his circle around him. He had an army of enablers allowing all of this to take place. If anything stands out to me in her text, she said a few things. That one, she needed to feel safe in order to participate in the freak-offs, that the freak-offs left her feeling grimy, and that the intimacy felt different than when they first started dating when they were in love, which means that at some point, Sean Combs' real personality emerged in this so-called relationship, and she did not feel safe, she did not feel loved, she felt grimy and used, and then she was beaten for it when she tried to express that. So these exchanges back and forth are not really an accurate depiction of what this relationship is like. I think the most accurate depiction would be the video footage from the hotel.
Back to Lauren Cullen at the courthouse. Was there mention of drugs used by both parties?
They really seem to focus on Cassie's drug use and the fact that she did do drugs quite often without Diddy present. And the defense said things like, well, Ms. Ventura, isn't it true that Mr. Combs wanted you to do less drugs and he was mad when you would do drugs with your friends? And Cassie said, no, he was mad when I would do drugs without him. They also seem to blame, or they seem to allude a lot of the blame on his violent behavior due to the fact that he was coming down from opioids or withdrawing from opioids.
Okay, hold on just a moment. They've got a $10 million defense team. But don't they know the law about voluntary use of drugs or alcohol? Straight out to a veteran trial lawyer joining us, Eric Faddis, founding partner Varner Faddis Elite Legal, former felony prosecutor. Faddis, voluntary use of drugs or alcohol is never a defense. If it were, everybody in the Fulton County Courthouse would walk free by saying, oh, I was high at the time. Sorry. Bye. No, that is not a defense. So arguing that Diddy acted out, I mean, that's like eating a dirt sandwich, acted out, in other words, beat her, committed felonies because he was high or coming down off drugs, that's not going to work under the law, Faddis.
Yeah, Nancy, certainly not a defense to any of these charges. When it comes to criminal defense, you have statutory defenses and you have non-statutory defenses, which are just things you defense attorneys kind of come up with that they think is going to mitigate their client's blame, their client's culpability. I think what they were hoping for is to try to suggest to this jury that it wasn't, the real Diddy who was committing these things. It was some Diddy who was hopped up and intoxicated on drugs. Does that really excuse his behavior? Legally, no. Could it mitigate it in the eyes of some jurors? That remains to be seen.
Okay, yeah. Everything that you just said is BS because you said that there are statutory defenses, in other words, accepted defenses, like it was an accident, it was self-defense, it wasn't me, I have an alibi. Those are, as you're calling them, statutory or accepted defenses that actually work. That's what that means. Then you mentioned something about non-statutory defenses. This is where I'm calling BS on you, Faddis. Non-statutory defenses. Like this one. I tried a homicide. There were two defendants, two defense lawyers ganging up on me, and one of them came up with transferred intent. I'm like, what is that? And he actually argued. I was so happy. I tried not to smile. He actually argued to the jury. Yes, I gunned down the victim, but it was the wrong person. I meant to shoot somebody else. I meant to shoot a drug dealer, not a 12-year-old boy coming home from band practice. So he admitted he shot somebody down, an unarmed person. Okay? Is that what you're calling a non-statutory defense? In other words, a defense that doesn't work? Because the law is black and white, letter of the law. Voluntary use of drugs or alcohol is not a defense. You said something about it's just something they make up, hoping to mitigate liability or culpability in front of a jury. Did I get that right? Because I'm loving this.
Well, there is the letter of the law, and then there are kind of shades of gray that emerge in the practice of law. What I'm talking about are defenses that fall into the category of zealous advocacy that might not be enumerated in some statute. But I think an example of that in this case, too, is where defense is saying that Cassie was also violent towards Diddy. That's not a defense to sex trafficking, but it is something that the jury might consider in deciding who was to blame here.
It looks like, control room, I need to show Faddis the Intercontinental Hotel Cassie beatdown again. Faddis, I want you to train your eyes on your monitor, okay? Now, does this look like Cassie Ventura, 90 pounds soaking wet, has ever been the aggressor? Right? Yeah. You're telling me that it's Cassie Ventura? She's the one giving him a good old-fashioned booty beating? He's the one taking a whipping right there. Okay, so I should believe you and not my lying eyes. Is that what you're saying? Did you actually say Cassie Ventura was the violent one?
Well, it is not my defense. I think it's what defense attorneys might argue. And it sort of dovetails into them bringing up Cassie being threatening and threatening to kill this guy, which you referenced earlier. I think it's sort of a narrative that defense is trying to run to show that, hey, she wasn't this meek little mouse who would just go along with what anybody but he said. She stood up for herself, and surely that video is not an example of that, but defense is saying there are examples of that.
He is a vile, greedy abuser. Sean Combs controlled every part of her life.
He's very much in control.
It is like he was a film director.
All of that is planned. Puffy plans his life like a movie, and he's the director and the star.
Straight out to Sydney Sumner, joining us along with Lauren Conlon with the very latest from the courtroom. Sydney Sumner, what else did you learn from the testimony today?
Nancy, an interesting part of testimony was listening to a recording of Cassie threatening to kill someone who had possibly seen a sexually explicit video of her. Now, Cassie was talking to a DJ at a party in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and he mentioned that he had seen what she assumed was a freak-off tape featuring her. Now, she goes into panic mode. She texts Diddy about it. He's telling her to get as much information as she can. They're trying to put wraps on this without involving their crisis management team because nobody knows about these freak-offs. It's just her and Combs. allegedly, at least.
So every single thing she's ever done or said, the very worst, is coming out in court. You know, Robert Crispin, again, we're not talking about nuns and priests and virgins. That's not who's up on the stand right now. Yes, Cassie is about to give birth to her third child. She is a married lady. But there was a time that she did drugs with Sean Combs, and she was in freak-offs, she says, at his demand. Are you surprised that a woman said, I'm going to kill you if you publicize a video of me in a freak-off with paid sex workers? I am going to kill you. There will not even be a smudge of you left behind. Listen to me. Are you that surprised that she said that?
I'm not surprised at all. At all, Nancy. This is her reaction to someone who's about to destroy her life. She's never had to deal with this before. And it's a spontaneous utterance to this person about, hey, I'm going to kill you about this tape. She didn't mean that. I doubt she meant that at all. But she's in a world, and this tape's about to go out, and it's going to ruin her career. It's going to ruin her singing, anything to do with movies. This is a problem for her.
And you got to think about it. I mean, think about it. Dr. Cheryl Errett joining us, clinical forensic psychologist, who put her in that position to start with. I mean, Dr. Cheryl, you're so prim and proper. Let me just ask you, have you ever shot a bird at somebody in traffic? Just even once?
I must confess, yes, I absolutely have. Okay. I have.
What if that person had a video going of you and you had this angry face and you're like making an angry face and you shoot a bird and they get it on video and threaten to like put it on your hack into your website and publicize it? That one moment where you're angry and you react. And here this is getting brought in front of a jury. I mean, nobody's giving this woman a break at all. And I get it. The defense has got to try to discredit her. But I really feel for her.
I do, too. Women are expected to be perfect victims. If women are not perfect when they're being victims, they're not believed. It's mitigating for the perpetrator. And I think what we're seeing here very often are fawning responses. What we're learning is that everybody knows about fight or flight. But one of the other things that the nervous system does to survive a situation is fawn. When you can't escape and you have a perpetrator there and you know if you fought back that things got more violent, which she has testified to, wanting to be pleasing, wanting to not make the perpetrator angry, wanting him to see you as human or remember that he cared about you. These are survival responses that the autonomic nervous system does. This is the body saying, this is how I'm going to survive.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Brett Brown joining me, Executive Director, Surviving Assault, Standing Strong. How about both things are true? I'm not claiming that Cassie Ventura is an angel, that she's never done anything wrong. And yes, I think she did threaten that person, threatened to kill them if they released video of her buck naked having sex with paid sex workers brought into the jurisdiction by Sean Combs. Yeah, I think she said, I'm going to kill you, and then he's going to kill you all over again. I think that happened. So, can that be true? And can it be true that Sean Combs forced her and others, there's going to be other female victims on the stand, to participate in freak-offs, rapes, transported sex workers in from other states, which is interstate prostitution, which is a federal crime in the indictment, and had a loose federation, his cronies, that made all this happen, that went to go buy the baby oil, that set up the lighting, that arranged travel for the sex workers. All those people are part of RICO. Everybody getting together, even loosely, to make something illegal happen. Right? So, can both those things be true? Can she have threatened to kill somebody
and he's guilty.
Yes, both of those things definitely are true. And I think we're missing a really important part here when it comes to that video footage and this DJ when she yelled at him and said, I'm going to kill you. It's more than just her feelings about being exposed for being a part of these freak-offs. Remember who she has to answer to. Sean Combs said, find out as much as you can to stop this from happening. If that video got leaked, guess who was going to pay for it? It wasn't going to be that DJ. It was going to be Cassie Ventura, and she knew that. So when we're talking about her feelings, and I really hate using that word in this instance, that was fear. She had to make it stop, and she had to do it convincingly. And where did she learn those threats from? She learned it from somebody who does them very, very well. Additionally, it's so fascinating to me, especially when we talk about shades of gray in the law, as was mentioned earlier, this discrediting of the victim. There's this weird cultural thing where by putting up anything she's been a part of, drugs, whatever, that don't make her a perfect person, which none of us are, what they're actually saying is somehow your choices and your less than perfect moments make it okay for someone to force you and to rape you and to do all of these horrible things. That's what we're actually hearing.
We are standing by at the courthouse with the latest to Sidney Sumner. Baby oil again in the courtroom. Why?
Nancy, that was brought up again to dispel a few rumors surrounding this case. So Cassie testifies that drugs were never in the baby oil that was used in the freak-off. The baby oil was not laced with anything. It was just baby oil, though they did take drugs together.
Oh, okay, wait, Sid, you're telling me there were no drugs in the baby oil. It was just old school rape on camera. Okay, that makes it all better. There's still the claims, the allegations, and supported by many, many female victims that they had a few sips of a drink and suddenly they woke up with their vaginas and their rear ends hurting because their drinks had been laced with GHB or something akin to gamma hydroxybutyrate. But back to the baby oil, listen.
Cassie says Combs wanted her glistening at all times and had her reapply heated baby oil as often as every 5 minutes. And during one performance, even made her get into a kiddie pool of baby oil. Afterwards, staff members were charged with cleaning up, but with baby oil and bodily fluids all over the floors, walls, and door handles, Combs was frequently charged for damages to hotel rooms, negotiations handled by Combs' assistants.
Okay, it doesn't end there. Harvey Levin, our friend over at TMZ, got a hold of Agnew Fellow, the lead defense attorney, about baby oil. Listen!
They call them freak-offs. But, you know, back when I was a kid in the late 70s, they were called threesomes.
If these are genuinely threesomes, how do you explain 1,000 bottles of baby oil?
I don't know where the number 1,000 came.
The U.S. attorney said it.
I can't imagine it's thousands. I mean, you know, and I'm not really sure what the baby oil has to do with anything.
They're essentially saying it's a lubricant for an orgy.
I guess. I don't know what you need 1,000. One bottle of baby oil goes a long way. I don't know what you need 1,000 for. I mean, he has a big house. He buys in bulk. You know, I think they have Costcos in every place where he has a home. I mean, have you sat in a parking lot of a Costco and see what people walk out of there with?
Not 1,000 bottles of baby oil.
I don't think it was 1,000. I think it was. Let's just say it's a lot, okay?
Okay, that's from our friends at TMZ. That is the lead defense attorney getting, let me just say, a ream job from Harvey Levin. Another day in the federal courthouse in Manhattan. Sean Combs on trial in a multi-count federal indictment, including RICO and sex trafficking. To Sidney Sumner, how did Prince Harry, how did he get sucked in to Diddy's cesspool?
Well, Nancy, Prince Harry was mentioned right at the beginning of this case exploding. So we saw Cassie file suit against Sean Combs in November of 2023. And then the next big lawsuit came from Rodney Little Rod Jones. This is a producer that was working with Combs on his latest album. And he filed a 73-page lawsuit against Sean Combs. And in that lawsuit, he mentioned that Combs' connections to big celebrities and even British royalty gave him legitimacy so that he could use his parties and his events to cover up crimes like freak-off parties.
And now Prince Harry, love him or hate him and his wife, Megan, and love her or hate her, at least she's got a job, right? At least she's working. Let's just put that out there. Court documents revealing Prince Harry claimed front page stories about him and Diddy had, quote, hugely negative impact on his mental health and that of his wife and children. Who wants to be on the front page of a magazine with Diddy at a party? I don't. So now Diddy has sucked Prince Harry into his sex trafficking claim cesspool. This as Justin Bieber makes a bombshell announcement after a lot of speculation. He had been abused by Sean Combs. He comes out and says, no, I was never abused by Sean Combs. What else did he say, Sydney Sumner?
Justin acknowledged that many people maybe were victimized by Diddy and they deserve justice. But Justin says he never even really had a relationship with Combs. All of the videos that we've seen of him appearing with Combs were basically performances, and he really only had a relationship with Combs' children, Quincy and Justin.
You know, Crispin, second verse, same as the first. Nothing new under the sun. Once again, an alleged rape victim is being dragged through the mud. Same thing. It happens every time, Crispin. Don't you ever get tired of it?
Sadly, it happens all the time from these defense attorneys. And they try to turn the jury against the victim to make the victim look like the bad person. I don't think it's going to work in this. I really don't. I think every single one of these questions that are going to her right now from the defense is turning off the jury. It really is. She is a true victim. I feel horrible for her. And I think the jury's going to start seeing through it as each of these other additional victims come forward. You're going to see a pattern. Everybody has a pattern. And I think it's all laying out right now. But yeah, jury, they're going to make their own determination. Trust me.
I can only pray. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.